to this week's Sunday Twitter space, Epoch Space, as I like to call it, or Epoch Sex Space. If you're used to listening to my recordings, I typically get started about 10 or so minutes into it. So just skip ahead a few minutes at a time until you start kind of hearing the conversation become fluid. So again, if you're listening to space, I'm going to go on mute for right now while I tweet it out and reshare it out and everything and wait to see if anybody joins. And then we'll get started here in a little bit. What's up, Sam? Just getting started, man. I'll go ahead and invite you up. Oh, let me mute myself. Oh, that is horrible. Okay, I always forget to do that, and there we go. How are you, Sam?
I'm doing pretty good. Trying to. A second. Okay. Was trying a little bit different setup, and it's very weird because so it's like a one of those like podcast mics,
Okay.
and then it has like an audio out for hooking up headphones or whatever, and Anyway, so like when I was down in the lobby, I could hear you through the headphones. But then when I came up to speak, for some reason, it like transitioned to the phone. Very strange technology.
Interesting.
Yeah,
Yeah.
I'll have to play around and see. But anyway,
Yeah, man.
what
Yeah,
are
I
your
just use
latest?
a I have like a $100 headset that I do when I do these things, and then I have like a $40 or $50 mic that I'm been using recently for when I record my YouTube videos. I definitely don't have anything fancy in terms of audio, but it works. So
That's the important part, right? I mean,
yeah.
and I mean, I'm pretty much just like the external mic that we ended up getting is, I mean, it's pretty decent. It's pretty good, but yeah, a buddy of mine, like he was doing, whatever. He had like a YouTube and a Twitch and Facebook Live. Like he was doing all these things like back in the day, that he monetized for like gaming, and his setup was crazy. And I mean, and he was making, some money on it, so he probably at least covered his
Recovered his
setup
cost.
fees. Yeah, but I
Right,
was
yeah.
like, I'm trying to buy like all these wild things.
Yeah, I was, yeah. There's a lot of things in my list that I want, but, like, there's this, like, this $500 mic that I know a lot of people use that's really cool, but,
Sure.
I'm just not at that point to where I think it's reasonable to,
Right.
yeah.
I mean,
But
in like, just in, like in my ears, whatever setup you've got right now works. Like it sounds pretty good.
oh, good.
And yeah, I mean, like as far as the priorities go, I'm more likely to buy a Protectly Vault, firewall for my home before I buy a $500
Me too.
headset. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I was at, I live in the country, so I don't have a lot of tech stores near me. And I was traveling for work one time in Northern Virginia, and there's a Micro Center there. So I went there, and
Oh,
I don't
yeah.
even know what it is, but it's by Razer. It's one of their lower end standalone mics. They had it on sale
Okay.
for $40, and I'm like, okay, yeah. So I bought
Yeah.
it, and it's actually very terrible without any modifications, right? So, and I use OBS Studio when I'm recording my YouTube videos.
Right.
So, I had to watch a lot of videos and spent hours adjusting everything to make it work. It works really well once I did that, but
Yeah.
out of the box, it was just, I mean, you could hear something like 500 feet away in the mic. You know, it was just,
No.
it was horrible,
Black
but
background noises.
yeah, but
Yeah.
yeah, I mean, I guess the moral of the story is, I guess you can make a $40 thing work,
Sure. Yeah, no. It's
yeah.
no, they're pretty yeah, I mean, I think it's all those kind of what you do,
Yeah.
for like for some of the YouTube videos that I made, like early on I was using my wife, I had bought her a Yeti Blue, and those are really nice. They're like $100. I
Yeah, I
think
hear a lot
my
about these Yetis. Yeah. Yeah.
yeah, and I mean they're great. Like they're cardioid. Or, I don't know if I'm saying that right, cardioid, I think, but like microphones, so they're just whatever the way that they receive the audio and get it is just like it's one of the better for just straight voices, right? And anyway, but like so I was using that for a while, and then the cable broke. And it was so crazy because just replacing the cable with like I couldn't find a blue or a Yeti. Yeah, I think Yeti is the name of the company, but like I couldn't find a Yeti OEM mic, right? Or cable, sorry. And so, like, I ended up buying some other one. I bought two before I gave up because, like, I don't know what it was. The audio quality was not good. Anyway, we don't need to turn this into audio. But yeah, I mean, it's anyway. The short story is, yeah, I think, I don't know that it matters exactly how much. I think a lot of those things, it's probably like. Soft, with a little bit of software or whatever, they're just fine.
Yeah, I mean, I think the more higher end things you buy, the well, I guess the easier. Well, actually, I don't know that. I mean, I guess it becomes easier in a sense to make them, more convenient to work with, but then also more
Sure.
complicated because they can do a lot more things,
Yep.
like the all I have right now, for the longest time, all I did. I mean, for the first 18 videos I did on YouTube, for example, all I did was use this $100 mic and the light on my ceiling fan. Now my wife
Yeah.
bought me like three of the miniature kind of video
The
lights and
yeah.
this microphone. Yeah. Hey, what's up, Jarhead? I'm gonna invite you up, man.
Hey, Jarhead.
And I also I don't know how many people we're gonna get tonight because a few things. One, I didn't share this out like I said I was going to earlier in the
Oh
week.
no. Oh yeah, and let me tweet it for you.
I've had a couple people message me already and say they won't be able to make it, but they'll listen to the recording. And so I don't know. And it's also becoming good weather outside, so I think people are doing better things with their time. I don't know, man.
Better than
What's up,
coming to a
Jarhead?
beach
Ha
outside.
ha yeah. Happy birthday, man.
Oh, hey, thanks a lot, man. Appreciate it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Birthday week, it's over. It's over because it's Sunday. It's not even, technically the week. New week starts on Sunday, right?
Oh, well, this is true. That is true.
Yep.
I'm interested about that jalapeno brine you had, though.
I know,
We
right?
grow our own
Three
jalapeno, so
days.
yeah.
Oh, no, dude, it's simple. You don't even use your own jalapenos. All you do is go to the grocery store, and you can just get the sliced jalapenos that are brined, pickled, whatever you want to call it, but they're brined.
Okay.
I don't know. They might be a 16-ounce, bottle, a 12-ounce, and you get two of them, all right? And you just get 3 or 4 pounds of, chicken wings. And obviously, it's cheaper just to get the chicken wings that aren't party wings, right? So you just cut the actual tip off, right? Anyways, then all you do is just pour. Well, all right. There's two ways you could do this. Right? So you can get the sliced jalapenos in the jar, put them in a blender, put both bottles in the blender, and just kind of, blend them up for, I don't know, a minute or something, and you kind of get like a little paste, little slurry-ish kind of thing. And you pour some of the chicken wings in a Ziploc bag, and then pour half the mixture in there. Get all that in the chicken wings, and then you pour the rest of the chicken wings in there, and then pour the rest of the stuff on top, and let it sit. I double bag it in a big Ziploc bag for at least a day, at least one day, but you can do up to 4 days. But you got to be careful because it'll start to really break down the chicken. Because it's
Right.
acidic, right? It's like a vinegar essentially. So 3 days is the best, but one or two that'll work. And that's it, man. Get nothing else. No salt, no pepper, nothing. That's it.
Nice. I'm gonna have to try that out. That Weber you have, is that I've never seen that Weber before that or that grill grate at least, where it has the hole in the center for, I've never seen that one before.
Yeah.
With the
So I have the Sun Auto, which is big, but if you get a Master Touch kettle or a Performer, it'll have it's called the Weber accessory system or something, and it comes standard on the higher end Weber
Okay.
kettles. Yeah, so you can buy all
Okay.
sorts of stuff. You can even get like a wok and stuff to put it in the middle, and
Yeah.
it's a stone, crazy stuff like that. It's not.
Yeah, ours.
I
Okay.
mean, mine isn't as fancy as yours, but Macaroni and I were talking about it before that I'm a Weber person, and yeah, mine has the circle that you can pull out of the center, And I, now, granted, I don't have like a whole bunch of the accessories that Jarhead was talking about. Like we did get a wok pan, from Weber just to use for it for like, whatever. We'll have to figure out, but I don't know. It's it's
Yeah.
pretty useful for me. It's useful because like I'll start, the pile of the charcoal, and then once it kind of, burns down a little bit, like I'll use that big hole to like, spread it around a little bit if I'm not trying to like focus it right all in the center.
So this isn't a smoking space, but I'll talk about it. But so, I used to, for a few years, I actually did competition smoking, briskets, pork butts, whatever it was, when I lived up in Missouri. And, I have two Webers. I have a side burner smoker. I have another smoker and then two Traegers. I always swore that I would never use a Traeger because I would always swear by charcoal, right? But then my father-in-law bought me a Traeger one year for my birthday. I had no choice and I kind of fell in love with it. So that's my story. But I don't, since you guys have Webers, you guys are probably familiar with this, but if not, I used to use my 28-inch Weber all the time to smoke. And what I did was something called the snake method with the charcoal, where you put two rows, basically halfway around the Weber on the outside, and then I stack those two rows again with two more rows offset with charcoal, and you just light one end of it, and you just put the wood, every other charcoal slot, if you will, on top of the charcoal, and you basically just kind of automate that. It actually works really well. So if you've never heard of the snake method, if you're into smoking with your Weber, check that out. It's the only thing I use on my Weber now when I use it.
I see. I've actually never heard of that. I'm gonna have to look it up now. After the space. Oh, do it, man. It's super simple. It's pretty much the easiest way to control your temps, to 250 if you're hot or something. Yeah, it's the best. I ended up buying a slow-wick sear several years ago. So I've 10 years or so. And so that's all I use. Just finally, bit the bullet on the sub, but I'm gonna want it forever. I don't have the steak
Nice.
method in the Kamado, although yeah, that it's great for control temps. How it goes, it can be tough. It's smaller. Well, if you had a 28 inch though, that's a monster. Well, I'm
It's
sure.
huge. Yeah. But you're right, Jarhead. I mean, the snake method, dude, is for a Weber is it's the only foolproof method I've ever found for smoking on a Weber. Yeah, that's cool you've done it too. Yeah. All right. So Jarhead, I don't know if you heard, I was telling Sam, because of the weather and other people messaged me saying they're going to listen to the recording and everything, and I didn't, and I wasn't very good again about sharing this out earlier in the week, and it's Sunday evening. I don't know if I'm going to have a lot of people here, but anyway, I'm still going to go through this. But last week I talked about crypto scams, and I know this is titled crypto scams, but I did swap the order. Today I was specifically going to talk about social media and securing those accounts. I did my little 5-minute segment on Cardano over coffee on Friday, and I did my YouTube video already on it this week, which is posted. But I'm happy to talk about that. But also, I was kind of curious, Sam, if you want to talk about. I haven't actually. Ha I quickly read those that tweet thread where you're talking with Cloud on, and I was kind of curious if you could recap that real quick. I would be interested in talking about that real quick.
Oh, with Cloud, yeah. I mean, we didn't get very deep in it, but oh man, what did he? How did he? Or I think it's a he. I don't know. If it's not, I apologize.
But something about developers and quickly releasing things
Yeah.
and
So,
or
yeah. So he started off, or they started off with, the. They're, one of their little things they put up every couple of days or whatever, and he's like, I can probably whip that up in 20 minutes, the developer, 3 days, 3 days ago when he started the mess. But anyway, I mean, yeah, we were just kind of going down on that, and so I had very briefly in a single tweet, right, recounted like we had a client to what was it like that maybe towards the end of last year or whatever, and there was one feature that we. It was like on our development, pipeline for like much later, but we didn't have it. It wasn't like critical or anything. It was just like it was a quality of life kind of a feature. And I remember like him and our CEO and like the team were like going back and forth about it. And I guess it's some conversation he was like, I'm telling you, it just takes 30 minutes to make this. Like, if your devs are telling you that it takes longer, like, they're lying to you. And he was like so insistent, like, and rude about it, in my opinion. But, right. And it ended up taking a few days. Like, we had him prioritize it because we had a whole bunch of other things planned. It was a financially regulated application that we were working on, so there were far more important things to make sure we got right. And and then so then in this kind of interaction, right, Cloud and I just going a little bit on how, in my opinion, I think that the like the Facebook, and they really coined the term of move fast and break things, right? And it was like push code out as fast as possible. Because before that, and like before that, there was this concept of, I mean, like you had to have the program right. Right. And if you're as old as Jarhead, no, just joking. If you're as old as me, like you remember, right, like when you had to actually use the 3.5-inch discs to like, we had 12 of them to load a program onto your computer. I know that really ages myself, but like, right. But like you couldn't, or even when it was CDs, and loading software, like you had to get it right before you burned that disk, because once it went out, that was it, right? Like trying to get an update, after that went out was, I mean, it was a nightmare. And so, like, not that they didn't try to rush to deployment, but there was also the impetus that you had to get it right. Anyway, with Facebook really starting it of this concept to like move fast and break stuff, right, of like throw code out, right, because you'll just fix it in a version later on. Although it had been around for years before, it really highlighted the concept of what's called technical debt. And so technical debt for anyone, listening, at any point who doesn't know, right? So technical debt is essentially, it's that. It's where there are known bugs, in a program that is sent out, and then it and it's just put on, your tracker. Like your issues tracker or whatever to fix later, right? So it's like we need to get this out now. We know there's a bug, but we'll do that in version, 1.1, right, or whatever the case may be. And so we'll do that with a patch later. And I don't know if it started, I don't know that I have the statistics of the actual data of how it developed, but if it started small and it's kind of grown, but it definitely is at the point now where, right, there are a lot of vulnerabilities from a security or a privacy perspective, because some of those bugs continue to exist until they're eventually fixed, right? And then it's like you're playing this whack-a-mole game.
Well, not dinner. Are you done with that thought?
Yeah, I mean, I'm done with that. I had one more, but I was
Okay.
done with that thought.
Yeah, I think and we'll get into the main topic here in just a moment, but man, there's just so much to that. There's two like perspectives of thoughts that I have on that, right? One comes from a cybersecurity perspective, and one comes from the perspective of, I work with product managers on a daily basis, where they're running, they're the product managers are typically the ones in control of the delivery and the outcome of whatever solution or product that a company is delivering, right? And they're usually leading developers, engineers, communicating with different people in the company, et cetera. And it's always interesting to see all the different reasons and outcomes for when different versions of products are released. And I mean, to the some of the points you made, a lot of every single time a product is released, whatever version it is, I don't care what company you are, there are always things that are you're like, I want to do these things, but we're going to release the product now. Whether they're resolving potential vulnerabilities that they've decided are minimal in risk or features or whatever it is. I get their perspective because, at some point you just have to say, okay, I'm releasing it. You can't sit there all day, every day for years on end and just keep working through bugs and vulnerabilities and other things, because then you'll just never release a product. But on the other hand, I mean, there's just so many thoughts I have, Sam. Another problem I see a lot of times is the disconnect between product managers and lead devs and the disconnects between them and the customers, what they're expecting, the disconnect between them and auditing folks, the disconnect between them and people like me and my common roles where we are the ones implementing the solutions and architecting the solutions and customer environments, stuff like that. I don't know. It's just I could talk about that all day. Jarhead, what's up?
Before you get into the main topic of this, I don't have anything to contribute for this specifically, but I do want to mention something. I want to ask both of you guys something. So, continue on with the thought thread right now.
Oh, no, it's okay. I mean, Sam and I could probably talk about that all
Yeah,
night long. What's your
we could
question?
go forever.
Yeah.
All right. So I had an idea. Sorry, I'm off my dog. I had an idea several months ago. There's a book that came out, and it's geared towards kids for the most part. It has illustration and whatnot. It's called Hidden Systems, and I think maybe Sam, you've heard me talk about this before in a Twitter space, but either way, it's by an author named Dan Knotts. And I thought about starting up a Twitter space because a lot of conversations over the past couple of years on Twitter spaces has been about the things in our life, the infrastructure in our life, that a lot of people don't—they don't understand how complex it actually is, and it benefits people to understand that complexity. Cybersecurity is one of those things, and I was wondering if I started up a Twitter space, and I don't know what day, I don't know when, but if you guys would, be willing to tag team or one of you, just, kind of relating your experience and what you think people should know about the infrastructure behind the scenes of cybersecurity.
Yeah, man, I'm not speaking for Sam, but I'm pretty sure we'd both be in 100% support that. Yeah, and that's kind of Jarhead, that's kind of the thing I'm trying to we're trying to do, right? Is sure we're talking about something very specific at the current moment, right? But kind of the goal of that I've actually gotten a couple of people send me some very strong negative feedback because I don't think they understand really what I'm trying to do here. Not what I'm really trying to do is spread this knowledge in a way that most people can consume, right? Because I don't want to, be so specific that only developers or only seasoned cybersecurity engineers can comprehend or make use of, right? I want to be able to help out 100 people versus 5 people. So a lot of what I do is really trying to put things as simple as possible. And I don't know if that's what you're saying, but
It
not
is.
specific to cybersecurity, but in general, yeah. So I mean, I would be in immense support of that. Yeah.
Yeah, it does. It would require a little bit of thought, you know, for the interviewee or the guest, because you're thinking, just like this space, you're thinking about how to condense a complex subject into the simplest, terms, which is difficult, right? It's you have to sit and think about it and break it down into its finer points. So maybe once a month or twice a month, I would host this space or something. But anyways, it would just be on a variety of different topics, whether it's aviation or, like how the internet works or electricity, you know what I'm saying? Like things like that, things that people don't understand. How do you get your water into your house? What goes into water sewage treatment? So on and so forth. It's cybersecurity would fit in that vein, especially how important it is to the modern world.
Well, I mean, if you want Jarhead to do kind of a test run of it or something, bi-weekly would probably make sense. I think monthly people would probably lose too much sight of it. But if you wanted to try like something, if you wanted to just do a trial run at it on and use cybersecurity as a topic for that trial run, that'd be awesome.
Yeah, I'd definitely
Yeah,
be
absolutely.
all for that.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's do it, man.
We can
Let's do
ask
it.
my dad to help come up with some of the topics. As a super quick aside, it was funny because growing up, like in addition to whatever we had in school, my dad or my parents really, like they would come up with like little research projects that we had to do. Like I had flight, I had how a toilet works, how brakes work on a car. Like they were all kind of practical things, but it was really interesting because like he made us go research it and then like we had to come back with a report.
Love that. Love it. And maybe that's our age or our relative age, right? My buddy's dad said he'd pay him $500 if he read the entire encyclopedia over the summer. And he's like, "Whoa, $500!" He's like, "Yeah, I'm in." And so he did it. He's like 15 or something. He's
Holy
like,
cow.
"$500." Yeah, man,
I
he
mean,
did
I would want more than 500 for reading the
it.
entire encyclopedia, but that's awesome, though.
Yeah, I mean, it was back in like 1995 or something. So,
Oh, okay.
it's
Yeah.
that's big money back
Inflation's
then.
kicking in, right?
Shoot.
Yeah, that's good money.
Yeah. No, that's awesome. Yeah, because that was, I mean, just like you guys, when I was younger in the night, when I was growing up in the early 90s. If I asked my father a question, it was, you go figure it out first, you come back with what you know, and I'll help you out, right? But yeah. Hey, Armega, welcome to the space. I'm not sure I've met you before. We talk about bunch of different cybersecurity topics here to help out everybody. You're welcome to hop up if you want. Just request to speak. I don't push people to hop up, but you're welcome just to listen as well if you want. All right. So again, because of all the things I've already been through twice, we don't have a lot of people in here. So, Sam, if you don't mind, I'd kind of like to do a similar thing that I did last week because I've already done this three times this week. I would like to go over some of the things that I talked about in securing social media and get your feedback. So maybe it could contrast or be different or expand on anything that I've talked about before. What I did earlier in the week, though, is I talked about securing all of your social media accounts, around all the major platforms, whether it is Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, Reddit, Telegram, Discord. And I literally just read off the order of my YouTube video here. But what I did is I talked about a bunch of things, but I guess three overarching things what I talked about. One is securing all of these accounts with two-factor authentication. The fact that different platforms that I mentioned, you can use physical security keys or authenticator applications like Google Authenticator. I've talked about YubiKey a lot as well. The other thing I walked through is, when you're installing applications on your mobile device, it's easy just to kind of click through and approve everything and not pay attention when really you should not be allowing access to, your contact list, different things on your device, et cetera, that it asks for. Some applications will ask for full access to your device, right? The other major topic that I talked about in my video is I walk through in my video, I actually walk through each platform and the ways to kind of look through each one and all of their default settings, right? Because a lot every platform has default settings, of course, right? And some of their default settings are for reasonable purposes from a marketing or spreading the awareness of their platform or growing their platform perspective. But at that comes a lot of risk, right? Allowing access to your information that they'll provide to third parties or that they'll use to provide you content, spread whatever you're doing or provide information to you, different things like that. So I'll just pause there and see where the conversation goes. But those are some of the overarching things that I talked about this week because I think a lot of times people install applications from some very popular platform. Just name any of the ones I just talked about already, let's say Facebook or TikTok. And they just assume, subconsciously, sure, but just subconsciously assume that, whatever they're installing is safe and good to go, but they're not really actively paying attention or maybe not even aware of all of the different things that are set by default, right? One of the things I mentioned in my video is Facebook is probably my best example here for the default settings because if you go look at your Facebook account, you'll see the default settings, but then you won't realize that you need to click on the account center or whatever it is, for example, for all of the detailed settings. And it's very convoluted. It's so convoluted, in fact, that Facebook will have quick links to say, hey, if you want privacy, go here, click this button, right? Because they have to provide quick links or things like that because they're making their own stuff so difficult to find. Another thing is Telegram. Talking about 2FA, Telegram has their two-step verification or something, which is like using a phone number and a password or something, which is not two-factor authentication at all. And it really, really bothers me that Telegram is like that. Most other platforms do allow you to use authentication and things like that, but anyway, I mentioned a whole lot of things there. I'll pause and just see if either of you guys have any thoughts to kind of guide the conversation since I've already spent so much time talking about it this week.
Yeah, no, I watched a video, of course, and I need to share it on Twitter as well,
Well, thank you,
to
sir.
expand the, but yeah, I thought it was great, right? Like everything you talked about, really you could watch a video and I think that will make you,
I think I could get, I'll let you, I think I need to get more entertaining, but anyway, go
Yeah.
ahead.
Well, the camera personality, that's, it's hard for anybody, I think. Well, some people, right? But no, I think you went through the right steps and the right elements of how, what people should look for and what they should do. I think if somebody went through that video and just kind of took a look at it, even if they applied, I don't know, 50 to 75% of your recommendations, those are what I would consider, best practices of general things. I'll just highlight a few, maybe kind of quick things, that one stood out in the video and then just, some other things for me. First and foremost, I agree, right? Because this is going to be the first thing you interact with when you download any application, and that's permissions. I liked how you went through that in your video. So I won't go through like everything here, but yeah, absolutely. Like, when you first download any application, especially social media, but it can be anyone, right? That's the first thing you're gonna see, the first decision for security or privacy. And they are kind of different in some way, in a lot of ways, but and it is, right? So I just for me, right? Like I go through and I try to think very carefully of like, does this app need what they're asking for, and do I want to give it? And I know, between Android and iPhone devices, the way that they serve permissions can be a little bit different. Apple pretty much forces every application to ask for each permission separately. Whereas some of the Android, and I don't know if it's true for all kernels or all phones, right? But they I think tend to ask for like everything kind of all at once. But anyway, but yeah, I mean, but look at it, right? Like, do they need your contacts, right? Do they need your phone? Do they need your location? You know, and et cetera. I would just look at it, right? I mean, you potentially you're only going to make the decision once, so don't get into the permission fatigue of like, ah, I have to do this again, right? I'll just click whatever. Yes. Okay, fine. Take it all. Right. But like, take your time and go through it. You know, and definitely, but I won't maybe at least right now take a lot of time on it either. But like, I mean, two-factor authentication, multi-factor authentication. I missed the spaces. I think we were moving when you had that one or whatever. But right, any time that that one is like that an account offers it, you know, it. I mean, take it, right? Use it. You know, and I 100% I believe you're right. You know, on that SMS is the least secure out of all of the options. You know, as a side note, I would say, you know, if you're not, if it's between you not doing any two-factor authentication, you know, or selecting SMS, I would rather you do SMS. You
Agreed.
know,
Agreed.
because even though. Yeah, I mean, anyway, we could go into that for, but anyway, you know, take something, some two-factor. You know, ideally, I think for most people, that's going to be an authentication app, whether that's Authy, YubiKey actually does, or Yubico does have one too. But Authy, you know, the Google Authenticator, any of those, you know, they're really good. Obviously, King of the two-factor multi-factor is going to be an actual physical key, like a YubiKey or I hate to say it, but a Google Titan, right? They're phenomenal devices as well. And then, you know, if it just has to be SMS, then just it's better than nothing. Yeah, I mean, for things that weren't necessarily covered as like they were covered in the video, but like, you know,
Hey,
oh, sorry,
Sam.
yeah, go.
No problem. Not to interrupt you, but let's get into stuff not covered in just a moment. Jarhead raised his hand. We'll definitely get into that stuff not covered. I like the fact that you're going to bring that up. I appreciate that. But yeah, but real quick to your point though, yeah, I completely agree with you, right? If your choice is to not use 2FA at all or use SMS, then yes, use sure, you know. But make sure you at least have SIM locking enabled on your device, right? If you go into whether you have Android or Apple. If you go into your settings and search for SIM lock, there's a feature in there to enable that so that somebody can't socially engineer your service provider to hijack, to basically get a SIM a SIM card they have to, long story short, to get your text messages and everything sent to you, right? But Sam, you're dead on, man.
I mean,
You're dead on that.
and absolutely. I mean, for that one too, in the SIM locking, just super quick is, I mean, look at T-Mobile in 2021, right? It is at least the largest instance of that, and I forget how many. I mean, it was like millions of potential users from T-Mobile that had their SIM credentials leaked, right? Or breached. They were stolen in a breach. But yeah, so that's huge. But okay.
But yeah, and real quick, Jarhead, I'll get to you in just a moment. Yeah, and just to reiterate your point about YubiKey and Google Titan, like I know YubiKey specifically, yeah, to your point, just to be clear for anybody that potentially listens to this recording, YubiKey has a lot of different options for their devices, whether you're looking for a specific connection, whether it's Lightning or UBC, USB-C or USB-A or whatever. But they also have like NFC devices, etc. But the device that I use specifically is their 5C, so the YubiKey 5C. That allows you that basically gives you the option so that if whatever platform or website tool you're using only allows you to use an authenticator app, they'll allow you to use that with your authenticator app. Or if the device site also offers to use a security key, like Sam mentioned, you can use the 5C for that as well. So that's probably, in terms of cost and versatility, that's, in my opinion, the best option, the 5C. But yeah, I just want to mention that based on what you said, Sam. Jarhead, go ahead.
So, real quick, I'm thinking about the structure of the space right now. I'm just spitballing a little bit here, and
Sure.
I think what would work out really well is if there was a kind of like a pre created predetermined slide deck with a tweet thread, and that could be posted to the top. And it might even correspond to the actual YouTube video. And I don't know exactly how you've done your YouTube videos. I haven't watched one yet. I don't do a lot of YouTube. But yeah, I think it'd
Let's
be.
pause there for a moment, Jarhead.
Let's ruminate on that.
I shared a tweet up top. I would appreciate when you get done speaking to go check that out and check out my videos and subscribe and let me know what you think, sir.
All right. I certainly will,
But
man.
go
I
ahead.
certainly will. Yeah, it's. Anyways, it's just kind of like a more guided discussion what is happening in Twitter spaces. And also, I think something that'd be really cool is you have different topics, right? They might all revolve around kind of like an umbrella topic. But if you had specific examples that maybe you started out with, just word of warning, examples of disaster, that occurred, whether it was a corporation or whether it was some sort of personal disaster because people didn't actually apply any of these best practices.
Like
I
case
think that'd be
studies.
pretty damn cool too. Yeah, just a case study, something
Yeah.
short. It could be, just use a source. Hey, I read Forbes, and or it doesn't matter what it is. That'd be pretty cool.
That's actually a really good idea, Jarhead. And by the way, anytime anybody has any suggestions, I'm all about that because I know cybersecurity, but I'm not a pro at delivering the content, right? And it's great to get it. That's why I have Sam up here a lot too, because I don't know everything, and all of my perspectives aren't all of the perspectives too, and things like that, right? So, but anyway, yeah, that's a good point. In the YouTube video, I do a lot of, well, not in that YouTube video, but a lot of times I do walk through different examples, and actually, in that one, I do. Well, maybe my crypto scams video, the one I did right before that last week, I walked through different examples like the Coinbase when Coinbase launched their layer two solution called Base, and then when IOG announced the Midnight Chain, right, and things like that. So I did use examples like that in the video, but so I should probably do that and use that. I think that's a great idea that we should probably have a tweet thread, probably like in the middle of the week or something. Would you think like to kind of refresh everybody's memory that the space is going to happen on Sunday and have that tweet thread along with it for all the examples and talk about that on the space, right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it sucks. Like, no one wants to do PowerPoint, but there's Canva. Shit, you could even use ChatGPT or whatever. You could just input the points and throw it into
Right.
Midjourney or something, and you create something special. You know what I mean?
Oh,
That's a great idea,
I
man.
am the PowerPoint king. I've been trained and forged in my long career in the military. No, but yeah, no, I think that's a great idea. I kind of have an idea of maybe something that could work for the small screen factor on a phone. I'll throw the idea. I'll kind of put it together and throw it to Macaroni and see what you think. And maybe we can. But I think it's a good recommendation
Okay. Yeah.
because yeah, like Jarhead said, I mean, it might help people one see like. So they can watch the YouTube. I would probably do it in this order, like, have the YouTube video, then capture, the key or the most salient points in kind of this slide concept, and then so you put out the video whenever you do that in the week, right? If you do that on like, I'm just spitballing, I don't know, but like you do that on a Tuesday or Wednesday. Something like that, and then on, I don't know, Thursday, Friday, right, like a day or two after that, kind of in that sweet spot before this space. Like you send out like a thread of, hey, here's a visual representation or a text-based representation of what was covered in, link this YouTube video. And then like you carry all that forward into the space so that, as Jarhead kind of, as he said, then as we're going through, we can share up at the top. Okay, here's the next topic we're doing, right? Here's the next topic. And like you just sharing like the slide picture. So I don't know.
People want that. People want that access, questions might derive from the actual PowerPoint itself. And also, here's a really important factor. And when people are trying to engage in, quote, market and, engagement farm, whatever you want to call it, it gives a natural point for you to actually ask questions from people that, maybe industry experts. And you might be one yourself, but it's always good to have other people in the Twitterverse chime in
Absolutely.
if they will, if they will. You don't know. I did that that smoke a couple weeks ago, and I tagged Weber Grills. Well, guess what? They replied. They didn't do much. They just threw like a couple fire emojis, but you know what I'm saying? Like they replied. So imagine if there's some, super cyber, nerd out there and or a couple of them, and you tag them, maybe ask them a question, like play dumb or something like that. Be like, hey, what's your opinion on this? And maybe they'll respond, maybe they don't. One of these weeks, they will.
I tell you what, this is a perfect example of what has happened since October. So I started my project in October when I was building out the website and kind of spreading everything, et cetera. And I officially kind of started in November. And in the last 6 months, not to any specific like it wasn't like routine, but just like you guys are doing now, throughout that 6 months, I've gotten a lot of feedback like this, and I've gotten to the point I am now because of people like you sharing those points with me. You should have seen how I started out my project in November, because what I'm traditionally used to doing is talking to an enterprise customer with, thousands of employees and 200,000 nodes, and I'm just like, this is what you need to do. So it's been a, while we definitely have the knowledge, like it's a learning curve on the, because what I have to, to, I think, if you guys agree, some of the points you're making, I need to make this more consumable and entertaining for people too, right? Just think about kids, right? If you're trying to teach your kids something, you need to kind of make it entertaining for them too at the same time, that kind of idea. And I've learned a lot from, not to beat the dead horse here, but I've learned a lot from getting random feedback from folks like you, right? But yeah,
Yeah,
I
dude. I
mean, that's a
mean,
good.
look. Think about the best interviewers out there. And okay, maybe none of us are going to be, Larry King or Charlie Rose, and they're bad examples because time's passed. But Diane Sawyer and Dan Rather and all this stuff, right? No one's going to be them necessarily, or maybe we could be, but we can definitely learn the tips and tricks from them. And keeping things engaging, always trying to focus on the audience itself and what they need to know. And even though you could talk about this for 2 hours, as much as I would like that, and maybe Sam would, and a couple other people out there, it's gonna get a little dry and boring at a certain point, right? So it's anyways, constraints. Look, we're all in the business. Well, we all understand constraints. Sometimes it's better just to have them.
You're absolutely right, man. You're absolutely right. Hey, driving tips, I invited you up to speak. We got about 10 more minutes or so left here today, but I invited you up. I appreciate you as always. You can hop up if you want. You don't have to, though. But yeah, man. Yeah, Jarhead and Sam, yeah, that. It's just I started out the project to kind of like start doing it, and then my mentality was to learn and grow as it went. So hopefully I'll be where I need to be by the end of the project and the end of this October. I actually, not to make this, I know this space is specifically about social media security, and we kind of talked about it a little bit, But I would like, actually, since we're on the subject, I want to share the thought with you guys and see what you think. I understand that your, experience and stuff may not be specific to what I'll say, but I want to see what you think about this general idea. So after my project is over, the catalyst funding at the end of October, I want to continue this, right? But I want to make it kind of my main thing and not have a day job anymore and make this my day job. So I was talking to my wife earlier, and I don't know if you guys are familiar with Marlowe. It's like, you got Haskell that was, they created Plutus based off of that, and then they created Marlowe, which is kind of like a contract based thing. But after the project is over, I don't want to use Catalyst funding anymore. I want to make it more like, because now I do these spaces and I do YouTube and all of that, but I also have multiple meetings every week with three or four different teams and three or four different individuals. But I want to make it to where, like, a thing, I'll break it down like this because I can get very long-winded. So I'll try to summarize it. So you have a Marlowe contract that says, hey, if this person has an Epoxic NFT, and they schedule one meeting, right? Then, or if they schedule a meeting, then they have to have this NFT. And if they have that, then as long as the meeting occurs, then those funds are, whatever the value is, it's then transferred to me. And then the NFT is sent back to the contractor or the pool or whatever, right? So that basically what they're doing is they're paying for an NFT to say, hey, they get a scheduled time with me. And then they lose that NFT so that they can't keep having meetings with me. And then somebody else can get that NFT to basically say, hey, this is the thing that says, hey, I paid the value. Let's have a meeting. After the meeting is done, then the value is transferred, and so is the NFT. And then furthermore, like if let's say the person doesn't agree that the result of that hour meeting was beneficial to them, right? Because that's fair to say. Then there could be a third party, but something built into that contract that says, hey, the third party then has to verify the benefit of this meeting was successful or valuable for this transaction to complete. If not, then this thing happens, whatever that arbitrary thing is. Go ahead, Jarhead.
Yeah, I'm gonna make this quick. I think that's a great idea. I think a couple people have at least attempted to do something similar. It's essentially a token gate, but there's more nerd stuff that can happen behind the scenes that I'm not privy to making. I don't know how the shit this happens. I don't know how this happens, but whatever. It seems like you're a dude who's capable enough to at least understand or maybe even know somebody who can facilitate this. I think it's a great idea. And I don't want to take any more time, but I just wanted to throw this out there, man, that if you ever want to talk about something or have any sort of strategic planning session, it's something I'm kind of nerd out on. This is my line of business for the most part, so I don't mind exchanging numbers or anything, and we can talk about whatever it is that you want to do in the future, and I'd love to just chat.
I appreciate that, man. I will definitely reach out to you. I sincerely appreciate that, and I will absolutely reach out to you and see. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, and as a matter of fact, Jarhead, my best friend is an ex-Marine, and we don't get to talk that much anymore. But yeah, I don't know where I'm going with that, but I appreciate you. What's up, Driving Tips?
Hey, yeah. I would love to see you geek out and go into like policy scripts and definitely all those cool things with I dabbled in Marlowe. I liked Blockly. I learned Haskell a little bit. I really don't know Plutus much, but that's like the core from what I understand. And anyway, I think that's a great token mechanism, having the contract there and solidify the trust and stuff. I Jarhead knows we've tried similar stuff, and yeah, token redemption is really cool and everything, but apparently just everything's a scam these days, right? So like I don't know, how can we avoid scams? Because everyone's building, but like really, what are you building? A contract script? Are you building like where do we categorize what is a scam? Is it these protocols could be even scams? Like, what do you think?
I'll let
Sam, you
Sam,
too.
maybe Sam give his point on that, but I will mention I like your term right there, token redemption. That's a good key term right there. Sam, go ahead. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, and I mean, oh, so many thoughts.
Yeah, that's why I turned it over to
yeah,
you.
but so I mean, so let's see. Let me address it this way. So I mean, the first thought, just going to what you mentioned, Macaroni. I mean, I think it's a really interesting idea. And I could see a way that it works, right? Because essentially, you are like Algratis doing cybersecurity contracting or security contracting, right? With the token, right? You buy the token for I don't know, whatever the price is, however that's, I don't know if it's a floor, right? And so, or whatever, but anyway, so you're buying the token, and you're getting it. I mean, I could definitely see a third party, like an Oracle, kind of doing some QA on if there's whatever you get graded, I don't know, 1 to 5 or something, after the meeting, and based on that determines the split or something like that, to where, I don't know, I mean, you'd have to keep it in some way where you're still getting some compensation for your contracting time, but so if whatever the lowest tier is, you get a 1 instead of a 5, repeatedly, that, I don't know, whatever, you keep 60, 75% of whatever that fund is or that fee is, and the rest gets returned if they give you a 1. Obviously, I would think you couldn't go all the way down to 0. That's just me. I mean, you're still given time. But yeah, I mean, as far as what's a scam or not, I mean that's, whew, that's, there's so much there. I mean, I would say for something like this specifically, right, I think a lot of is it considered a scam or not would come ultimately from the results of past customers, right? Because I mean, right off the bat, we can know you put your CV up on wherever you're doing it, and it's known, hey, this is my experience, this is what I have to offer, right? So I'm willing to take contracting whatever meetings to discuss these things, right? This is how long they're going to be, and whatever you kind of your left and right limits are on there. Right. And I think, it could be pretty broad, hey, you got 30 minutes, so I'll go as deep as we can in 30 minutes, right? But once that 30 minute cuts off, right, then you gotta come back with another token or something. Or however exactly that's worded. But yeah, I mean, as far as avoiding it being a scam, or not that I think it would be a scam, but the perception of a scam is you've got your CV. Right, or whatever information you're willing to put out to say, hey, here are my credentials. So this is what you're getting, right? And also, this is what you like, this is what I'm comfortable providing. Right. I mean, if you're, and I'm just saying hypothetically, but if you're a network guy, right, then maybe there's not as much experience on web application security, or if you're a web application security guy with some networking architecture background, but you're not a true expert or anything on I don't know, building the coding part that interacts with Cardano blockchain from a Haskell or a Plutus perspective, right? So in other words, I won't do smart contract auditing, but I'll do other parts of, is your dApp, as far as it's a web application with Web2 technology at its core, right? Is that secure? Anyway, whatever. I think just setting those up can kind of lead to expectation management for anybody who gets it, right? Or it's like, hey, look, you know, if you just want to know how to make yourself not the lowest hanging fruit for an attacker, not from like a cyber perspective or anything, but just like in general, right? Then yeah, we can have a talk and go over those kind of things. But yeah, it's you know, and I think, but again, I think it's a lot like, you know, as you get people to take part of it, right? The more people are like, yeah, no, he really did have, like we had a meeting, right? It went really great. Right. And however fashion that's put out, anonymous, you know, feedback or whatever. I don't know. Yeah. That's an interesting one. I like it though. Micro contracting.
Yeah. Yeah. I definitely want to find a way to continue this. Right. But, turn it to a profession and then like a lot, you know, and make it fair to people too. Right. I don't want it. My goal isn't to take advantage of anybody. I want to make it as, you know, as fair as possible, but make it fair as possible on both ends, you know, tricky thing to overcome. Right. Driving. Do you have any other thoughts on that? Based on what Sam said,
I think it's really hard to do. And now I'm thinking an algorithmic stable pay system that like pulls from a treasury that is like, you know, maybe a donation fund for certain types of efforts, right? But proof of work, as in like Sam saying, you know, submit your CV, someone puts down a contract, somebody provides the liquidity, and then is paying, right? And the other person gets the token, right? Pay for the service, the contract's over, they submit the token or buy more, right? I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, I did not mean to turn the space into something so complicated to talk about.
Yeah, but during the full-time Epoch Tech, I think my second thought is, there's such a big community that needs your skills, right? So to crowdsource, but also find likeness, like guys like Sam who resonate the same effect, right? Who can also give knowledge. Like your videos are great. Your YouTube's great. It's not getting, you know, I can't even share it enough. You know what I mean? I can't, right? It's not enough reach. So whatever impact you can do to scatter that knowledge, right? So you might have to rope some friends in, like that bounty system works great. I tried to get everybody to create tokens, right? And have their own. That's why I have driving tips, right? You can technically tip me, right? Or anybody that holds driving tips, right? It's my token. It's perfectly whatever I want to do with it. And that's the beauty of Cardano. You can just do whatever you want, right? And having a little portal to do that for services, you could do that by next week, right? Now getting people to use your services. What do you think, Sam Jarhead? What do you, you know, that's the thing.
Yeah,
everyone
man.
Thinks they're the best driver, right? Put me out of business.
Well, here's the thing is if like for, God damn it, this is going to go, this is what happens when you get some nerds up here. So
let's nerd it. Let's go.
Yeah. Oh, so driving tips. I was thinking about this, right? And if, just because you know people, or I'm presuming that you know people that can facilitate like a driving experience. I don't mean to go off topic here, but it's relatable. I was thinking, you know, there might not be that many people, you know, in the Northeast corridor that would take you up on those services, right? So say I owned a GTI, which I do, right? And I was like, you know what? I want to track this bitch, you know, and I'll drive up to, you know, wherever it is that you live. I'm not trying to say it out loud, record a space, but anyways, I think most of us know, and I'll go and I'll drive it around. You could teach me, you know, you could teach me how to heel toe, all sorts of crazy shit. And you could facilitate that through a token. And the value is, and this kind of sucks because if driving tips dies in a car crash tomorrow, well, then the value goes away. But maybe you build your network out to be able to facilitate this experience through the token itself, right? And in the same vein, you know, Macaroni, dude, you could, you could do the same thing. You can make these connections and let the network grow like roots on a plant. And now next thing you know, you have all your other nerd friends that are in here making some money, or they have availability that you don't have because you're one man. You know what I mean? And it's kind of like the, you know, when you need mental health services, you know, going to psychiatrists or psychologists, you know, like you're in a network of people. It's not just one person necessarily. And if it is one person, then you have to market the shit out of that to get clients, you know, and then the network grows from there. And when you have more people that are asking for your services than you can provide, you start bringing in your homies that you went to college with or something like that. And now you have a practice, and it's the holy macaroni practice of Epoch Sec. You know, that's how business has grown.
Yeah, man, that's overwhelming to even think about. But yeah, I mean, to all your guys' points, and that's kind of what I've tried to do over time, and that's why Sam is on here with me a lot now. And I've gotten some other minor help from other people in the community that have similar expertise, because I mean, let's face it, I don't know everything. I mean, there's a lot of things I just don't know. I've never had a job where I've been a full-blown pen tester, for example. So while I know some things about pen testing, I'm not a full-blown pen tester, right? And I don't know all the different cool things you can do, maybe. So there's a lot of people out there with a lot of expertise that I would like to bring in to help me in doing these things. And I don't know, I could go on with a bunch of different examples of my thoughts on what you just said, but I definitely get what you guys are saying. Yeah.
If you are going to do this full time, you're going to want a team to collaborate with, and that just requires more funding. So just,
Right.
you know, you have to think of yourself as just the cog in the business wheel, right? Use your talent, but it needs to be a cog, right?
That's a good point. That's a good way to phrase it. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, and a lot of that
Maybe
goes back.
you're the main cog. You know, think about it like I hate to make this comparison, but think about it like Polkadot, right? You have the layer zero, and then you have everything else that's a layer one off the layer zero. And then you have these other L2s, but they're layer one still. You get
Maybe
the
you want to
points.
be the clutch plate, right? The
Yep,
drive shaft.
that's right. You want to be the facilitator. That's what you want to be.
Yeah, and I can do that. I think the biggest challenge that I have that I'm trying to learn is the business side of things, because I've ran teams of consultants all around the world before and worked with. I mean, if you can name an enterprise company, I've worked with them. But it's the business. There's two things that I knew ahead of time that I would have to learn along this journey. Is one is the marketing aspect of it, because that's the one thing I have zero experience in, and the other part is the business side, right? Because it's already challenging enough. I'm sure you guys have done it, right? But just generally speaking, go register your own LLC and try to run a business on your own, much less have somebody else part of that, right? The especially in America.
Well, I am, so that's, but I'm also able to, like, you know, build wings to the ship, right? And you want to be part of the flock, right? So, like, when doing business, you just, you know, have to build with all the other businesses, right? IOG's a tank in the space, right? All these pieces take part in it.
Yeah, that's very
You're
true,
a
man.
talent. You're a talent for sure, and the space needs it. But the information needs to get out there too. So how can you use that leverage? I mean, me and Jarhead can banter about it over your videos. That's one way. But there's got to be more. Race car. I'm thinking race car. But that's my bias. I know you were going to shut her down and said 10 minutes, and we're over time. So take care of the fam, and I hope all is well, and love your videos. Keep doing it.
Yeah, man. I very go ahead, Sam, in just a moment. I just want to say that very, and I sincerely mean this, man. I really appreciate all of you guys and all of your input and help and everything else. But yeah, go ahead, Sam.
Oh, I mean, well, one thing I was going to say is I might need to I might need to talk to driving tips and geek out on some car stuff too. Anyway, no, yeah, I mean, I think these are all I think they're all really great points, right? Like, and I like the idea of the network. of people who are able to do it. I mean, I was talking, well, whatever, right? Like we, you and I had, I was in your space, was it 2 weeks ago? We did like the cybersecurity kind of like the path and the
Roadmap thing.
roadmap of
Yeah.
like, what's all involved and how do you get started and what are the different kind of focus areas or individual domains, if you will, within cybersecurity. And there's like, I think I've heard it as like the 10 domains at the core, like at the top. And then, right, there's so many different ways to go through it. And as you said, right, like, yeah, I mean, everybody, we said it on that one, but like everybody has different experience. And I think, bringing that in is good. I pride myself on like threat modeling and GRC is like some of my interests. We talked a little bit about that, but like, yeah, I mean, I think getting a network of people who have, credibility, and could offer either individually, something or collectively, right? Like, because I mean, in my mind, as I'm hearing, Jarhead driving and you talk, right? I'm thinking like, okay, well, what if a project, on Cardano or wherever, if it's spread, but like, but if a project was starting up and wanted to make sure that they're solid along the way, right? Like they could potentially, buy, an EpochSec token or a couple of tokens to get a few sessions of, going through the different moves, either that's, secure code review or, or setting up a network or their server or, going through a threat modeling. Anyway, I mean, like, I know that's like, kind of crazy down the road or kind of, big picture thinking, but, I think there's a potential value or like need for something like that. I think it was driving that said like there is, the need for that in the space, and obviously that's one of the reasons that, EpochSec and you got the funding from Catalyst, right? Like obviously people felt like it was important enough, and that's a, I mean, that's a huge thing, so.
I hate to say it, but you have to be sensational and scare the bejesus out of people. And that means that,
Yeah.
like the use case, you have to tell people the disaster because it's not uncommon. Like I'm not saying, well, across the world it's probably happening like once a second or once a minute or something like that, where, some business has just been destroyed or at least set back. Anyways, dude, this is extremely important, man. It really is. It's not one of those, nonsense things that people, okay, if you pay attention, cool. If you don't, cool. No. This is actually really, really important in everyday life. We live in the modern world, and we can't forget that.
I mean, you think
Yeah, I'm
anecdotally,
working.
oh, sorry, I was just gonna
Go ahead,
say,
Sam.
like, if you think anecdotally, like the scare factor in a way, I mean, you think of like how Network Chuck, for those of you who know him, right? Like I have a lot of respect for him. I
Awesome guy.
love his videos, and he definitely knows, a lot of what he's talking about from the networking perspective, network security. But anyway, but like even he, right, had his Discord channel hacked through an app that he had on there, one of like the little bots that he had, and he lost it for, I mean, it was like a couple weeks. And then he had to re like scrub the whole thing and start over. But anyway, yeah.
Yeah, my God, you guys just said enough to generate like 47 different thoughts in my mind. But yeah, I mean, I don't know, just some random stuff. I mean, there are, Sam, you saw what we talked about. There are dozens of different very niche roles just in the cybersecurity space alone, right? That take a lot of time and a lot of experience to get good at. There's no way that one person can be an expert or very skilled at all of them. It's just not even a thing. So is that, to be able to be broad enough to support everybody in all these different ways, I mean, it does take an entire team. And whatever you just mentioned about Network Chuck, or so, actually, I don't even know. I think I've just lost all my thoughts at this point, but had so many different thoughts that they just all got lost. But
Oh,
anyway,
read up to the top, man.
yeah.
I pinned something to the top here. This is an Army veteran. I actually just ran across this as I was listening to the
Oh,
space. Yeah, it's pretty
yeah.
cool. It actually relates to everything we've been talking about if you read through. It's not
Yeah, I'll
long.
check that out. Oh, and Jarhead, the other thing I was going to mention is a comment that you made. I'm actually working this weekend actively on an incident response where I can't say who they are, of course, but they got ransomware, right? And it's just kind of an unfortunate situation. I deal with these situations all the time, and that's actually something I talked about last week, where all these people building teams and companies and projects and applications in the crypto space, they deal with different types of attacks, like their API getting, leveraging their API for different attacks, getting DDoSed and whatever, right? But what I haven't seen a lot in this space actually actively is ransomware situations. Maybe they are, but I don't think they're quite all that prevalent yet. But in my day job, ransomware cases are just a routine thing. I mean, I've dealt with casinos, healthcare facilities, banking industry, all these different enterprises that have been affected with ransomware. And I it's not ransomware isn't the thing that I want to mention. Kind of the point with that though is the things that happened in the 9 or 10 months before that enterprise customer caught us with ransomware, where they didn't have any idea that the bad actor was in their environment already, credential harvesting, right? Stealing domain administrator accounts, data harvesting, finding out where all of their data is stored and compromising that and pulling that down to themselves and having all of that information, all of the stuff that happens before ransomware attack even begins. So, like if you hear in the news, I'm sure everybody, if you're in the US, at least you're familiar with the Colonial Pipeline thing last year, right? There's dozens and dozens of examples just in the last 2 years that I can give you related to that exact same thing, where if you read all the news things about Colonial, it wasn't just ransomware, it was all these other things that occurred. And I don't know where I'm going with that thought, but I just think that the crypto space is in a point to where the internet world was like 20 years ago, the Web 2 world was 20 years ago, is where crypto is now. Because the opportunity, the available opportunity for bad actors is still much more prevalent out there in the traditional space around the banking sector, the healthcare sector, the government sector, all of this. So as crypto is picking up pace and becoming more popular and more adopted, all of these traditional attacks, and new attacks, sure, are going to become much more prevalent in the space. And I think that, and I'm going off on a complete tangent here, because I had so many different thoughts, but I think that all of the attacks, well, I think that people are not paying attention right now to what can occur, right? So people are traditionally very reactive and not proactive, right? And I think a big thing in the cybersecurity space is trying to be proactive. Yeah, I don't know. I think my thought
Well,
is dwindling from there, but
I would
thing,
circle. Real quick.
Oh, yeah.
This is a quick
Go ahead.
point. This is a quick, mad quick point. I think people in Cardano, especially because we've kind of, I don't want to say solved 100%, but pretty much solved the layer one security problem. This is the deepest, that's all the deep, God damn, what am I saying? This is the deepest that people think about security. And so maybe you can't attack the L1, but what can you attack? You have to find the vulnerability, right? And that means that you're dealing with a personal level of attack, like phishing and stuff like that. So anyways, I kind of want to bring that up. I think that's an important point when, the L1 is secure itself. So what's the vulnerability? And I think that that's a good
Yeah.
niche to kind of carve yourself out.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. That's a good point, Jarhead. Sam?
Yeah, I mean, like Dragon said, 11 minutes ago now, right? I know you want to shut the space down, but there's like so much coming out from this. But
my wife will yell at me at some point.
Okay, yeah, when that happens, that's the hard cutoff. But I mean, wow, so much there. So I mean, I would go back to the colonial, right? So, and now let's just start there. So like the colonial, yeah. I mean, if you read through that case study, like where did they attack from, right? What did they actually ransomware? They ransomwared their business, like their business solution, the business management computer, essentially, or like that system, right? That network. It wasn't the pipeline. It wasn't anything. It was like the way they found in was through, you know, essentially like where they, you know, did their invoices and.
It was like, an email phishing scam.
Exactly. But it wasn't like they took over their SCADA devices that control the pipeline and would, you know, risk ruining it. It was like, no, like they just couldn't do any business related operations. But I think that that's relevant when you look at it, because it's like, you know, one weak system brought down all of Colonial, and you could argue whether they had to shut it down or they did because they couldn't build anyway. But I mean, but the point is they found something, you know, a way in, and the effect was they shut down. Or you look at like Apple, right? I mean, what, just in the last week, Apple has always been heralded as like, yeah, it's the most secure. Right. And same with Linux in a lot of ways, but it's like,
it's the whole opportunity thing, right?
And it's same. Like, yeah, but their market share is so small. Why would an attacker go after them? Apple's always been like, they're so secure. They're so secure. And I think they are generally right. Like out of the box. But even they had, what was it like 2 0-days discovered, in the wild being exploited, you know, in the last week, like
they just had that this week.
Yeah, it was crazy. Yeah, yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. In the last week. Right. And so it was crazy, but you know, and that goes back to, and you and I, we were on the space, or, you know, I was on your space and like, we were having this conversation about, you know, Web3 is a little bit of a misnomer, or maybe it's not a misnomer. It's just people don't understand, but it's like, it's blockchain.
It's the misconception, right, that people think that when they're interacting with the Web3, that's the only thing they're doing.
Right. But
it's like a subconscious feeling.
Yeah. But right? But you're using that Web2, the Web 2.0 architecture with your dApp, right? So you've got the Web3, but it's just tacked on to the old, same vulnerabilities, right? Same architecture of Web 2.0. And to where, you know, to bring that home to something that's relevant is like, you know, yeah, I think what you offer as far as the services of security and like this space and what, you know, like what you were brought in with Catalyst to do, you know, I think that absolutely is important. You know, and going to how Jarhead said it, like, you know, people feel like, okay, you know, Cardano's solve the layer one security thing. And from what I understand, they have, you know, a really strong showing of that. But that doesn't mean that when you throw up, you know, Liquid Finance, I'm not picking on them. I'm just a name that came to my mind, but like, right. But you throw Liquid Finance up as a dApp, right. Well, it is a Web2 backbone with Web3 enabled. And so, you know, so there are still potential vulnerabilities that, you know, that could be exploited, whether that's ransomware, whether that's any other, you know, plain old web application vulnerability. And like I said before, right, my thought on mixing this Web2 and Web3 is you have all these potential interactions that could cause security misconfigurations between the two, right? Like, are you missing something as you talk to the blockchain from your, you know, internet, normal HTTP Web2 connection? And there's so much there that I could go on about, but it's a really fascinating, this is a really fascinating topic. Even though it's less about, you know, social media and how to secure it. But again, I mean, I think your video explained that part so well. So just go watch that if you're listening to the recording.
Yeah, appreciate that, Sam. Yeah, Jarhead driving. Do you guys have any closing thoughts? I'm going to close up here pretty soon, but.
Think about leveraging a stake pool so people on the network could support you. Using
Oh,
your
yeah.
network, maybe? That's my final thought.
Yeah, man, I think that's a great idea. I have some thoughts about, like little packages that you can kind of introduce of best practices. I've thought about this a lot and kind of introduced a couple different things. But, that's probably a conversation me and you could kind of have personally.
Cool. Yeah, Jarhead. I'm definitely going to set something up with you, man. Appreciate that. Yeah. Thank you, driving. All right. So thank you, Sam, Jarhead, driving, Jarhead, Jar Jar Jeff. Thank you for listening. I don't know if you caught most of the conversation, Jar Jar, but the idea was to talk about social media security today. We talked about that a little bit. Then I made everybody talk about how I can grow this project. But if you watch that video up top, that I'll link, that'll help you. But anyway, I'm going to close up tonight. I'm going to get this brisket off the grill. And I hope everybody has a great rest of your Sunday.
Hey, have a good one, Macaroni, and everybody else too.
Thank you, guys. Take care.